Fairfax News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, you're never going to guess what happens in 19 days. Oh, you guessed. You guessed, did you? Yeah, Election Day, although early voting continues with significant early turnout all across the country. On today's Countdown 2024, for generations, there were two groups of voters that Democrats could count on to be firmly in their camp: working-class Americans without college degrees and Black Americans. But more Black voters than ever before seem to be giving Republicans a chance. The question is, why? Also, on today's Countdown 2024, we'll examine the so-called diploma divide. Can you tell a person's political preference by whether they have a college degree or not? But first,
more than 7 million people watched anchor Bret Baier interview Vice President Kamala Harris on Fox News last night in what was often a testy exchange. Meanwhile, Donald Trump fielded tough questions from Latinos at a town hall on Univision after Harris participated in a similar event last week. A 56-year-old Republican construction worker from Florida told Trump that after January 6th, he felt uncomfortable supporting the former president because of the insurrection. Trump, among other things, answered that Nothing was done wrong at all on January 6th and called it a day of love. Pew Research estimates that over 36 million Latinos will be eligible to vote across the country this year.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who has had an often torturous, to say the least, relationship with Donald Trump, is quoted in a new book discussing the former president back in 2020, calling him then a, quote, despicable human being, stupid and ill-tempered. When asked about the rather damning quotes, McConnell's defense was that other Republicans supporting Trump in the election have said even worse things about him. McConnell says in a statement, "Whatever I may have said about President Trump pales in comparison to what J.D. Vance, Lindsey Graham, and others have said about him, but we're all on the same page now." So says Mitch McConnell.
Lawyers for Donald Trump this morning asking the judge overseeing his election subversion criminal trial to hold back on the release of new evidence in the case. Trump has repeatedly accused the federal judge of being guided by political motivations and making key evidence public in the run-up to the election, while the judge says Election Day will have no bearing on criminal proceedings. The last batch of new evidence that was made public showed greater detail of Trump's maneuverings to overturn his election loss in 2020.
Black voters in America have been solidly backing Democrats for generations, and even if Donald Trump manages to put a dent in those figures come November, recent polling shows Black voters backing Joe Biden or Kamala Harris over Trump by a 4-1 margin. However, the trends are definitely evolving, and Black men in particular seem more open to considering Trump and other Republicans, enough to make the Harris campaign take notice. Christopher Towler is a political science professor at Cal State Sacramento, but more importantly, for our purposes today, he created and directs the Black Voter Project. Christopher, is the issue with Black men and, for example, Kamala Harris, that she's a woman? Does it have nothing to do at all with race? Is it a male-female issue?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on. I think that the first point I'd like to make here when regarding these issues, speaking of voters, Black voters for Trump, is that most of it is actually overblown, to the sense that Black support for Trump, even among Black men, appears to be no higher than it was in 2020. And it's actually trending towards greater support for Harris than Biden received back then. When looking at the actual specifics of why Black men in particular might support Trump, there's not much out there that suggests it specifically has to do with gender. But we absolutely can't rule out sexism and misogyny, as we know that those are present in every corner of every racial and ethnic group in America. So, you know, those are definitely there. But we really have to look towards things such as misinformation, look towards the ability for Black voters, particularly young Black men, to understand what a threat Trump means to America and really contextualize the danger that Trump represents to the Black community.
Is there any evidence out there, Christopher, that Black men are more or less likely to vote for a female presidential candidate than a white male?
There's evidence that suggests that men in general tend to lack in support for women candidates than men. But there's not a lot out there specifically zoning in on Black men, suggesting that Black men might support a Black woman candidate less than a white woman or anyone of any other race. And what we've seen is that Black men actually support Kamala Harris at greater rates than any other racial and ethnic group, gender otherwise, aside from white women, where Black women are supporting Harris, Black men are supporting Harris anywhere from 18 to 20%, where the next closest group is Latino women, right, at like 33%, and then Latino men. White women and white men all have far less support for Kamala Harris for president than Black men.
Do you think that what Kamala Harris has been doing in going into these different places where she's doing these interviews, trying to reach that particular segment of the voting public, the young Black men, that that's going to help maybe sway more of them in her direction?
I think that it could absolutely help, and it's long overdue. As we know, Black voters are the Democrats' strongest voting bloc, the most loyal voting bloc for the party. And so it's long overdue, as I said, for Kamala Harris and the Democratic Party to have an agenda for Black voters, for Black men, and for Black women. This is something that the party should be doing year in and year out because of the strong support that they receive from the Black community. I think I'm more concerned about actually getting people off of their couch and to the polls than really figuring out who they're going to vote for. We already know that over 8 out of 10 Black voters will support Harris. And so if the Harris campaign really wants to change the margins and flip some of these swing states, they need to work on getting as many people to the polls as possible, rather than trying to focus in on actually turning one voter against them or for them in the when it's all said and done.
And we're talking again with Christopher Towler, political science professor at Cal State Sacramento, created and directs the Black Voter Project. Is there something about Trump that would attract a Black voter, whether it's male or female, and what would that be?
Well, for the Black voters who support Trump, in the data I've collected, there's really a couple types of categories, right? You absolutely have the Republican, the Black Republican, the conservative who's going to vote for a Republican candidate, no matter who that is, Trump or otherwise. But you also have another corner of the Black community, particularly among Black men, who are sort of unlikely voters or low propensity voters that might express some support for Trump based on what they see as strength as a leader, things such as business acumen. There's also been talks of the young Black men really liking the effect of the stimulus check, even though there's a lot of misnomers as to how that check materialized and who was really behind the stimulus checks during COVID. But these are some of the reasons. And then, as we mentioned, you absolutely can't rule out sexism and misogyny, even though we can't say for certain how much that actually comes into play.
You know, you were talking about getting Black voters actually up off the couch and out to vote. Certainly when President Obama was elected, both times, the Black vote was tantamount, I believe, to getting him into office both times, just due to the historical nature of his presidency. Isn't Harris's potential presidency equally as historic? And do you think that is enough to get people out voting?
Although I believe her presidency is equally as historic, research suggests that there is less a sense of empowerment once the glass ceiling, if you will, has already been broken. And so over the years, scholars have looked at what it takes to get into office for Black candidates. And that first Black candidate usually garners historical amounts of Black support that following candidates can't seem to muster. And so you're absolutely right. In 2012, we saw Black support for the first time, or Black turnout, if you will, for the first time, supersede white turnout, where Black voters turned out at over 66% of eligible voters. 2016, it dropped. 2020, it bounced back a little bit, but not quite there, with about 63.5% of Black voters turning out in elections. And so we're looking at this election as trying to reach those 2020 numbers, if not surpass them. But it can't be said that that's going to happen just on Harris's candidacy alone and her potential to be now the second African-American president.
You know, the Harris campaign has been counting a lot on her attracting Black voters. But I'm wondering, do many African-Americans consider Harris to be of a similar background? I mean, she had a very different upbringing than many African-Americans in this country. Do they actually count her in the way that the Harris campaign seems to think that she will be counted?
Most Black Americans do see her as Black. They understand that the Black community is full of complex identities and is far more heterogeneous than homogenous, meaning there's far more difference and subsets within the Black community than are often talked about. However, there is, again, this sort of small segment of the Black community that is falling into far-right talking points and discussing things such as her race and as if she is really Black, but that's not the dominant ideology or the dominant way that Black people are viewing her. And this is, you know, all going to come to bear on election day, and we'll see how it plays out. But all of the data that I've been collecting suggests, again, that Black support for Harris is not waning, even amongst Black men, and we might even be seeing an increase in support from 2020.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much. Again, we have been speaking with Christopher Towler, political science professor over at Cal State Sacramento. And as we also mentioned, he directs the Black Voter Project.
What is the best predictor of how someone will vote in the upcoming election? It's not their race or gender, but rather their education level. We will explain next on Countdown 2024.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. Stretching back at least 100 years, working class Americans without college degrees were pretty reliable voters for Democratic candidates, while people with college and graduate degrees tended to vote Republican. But over the last 20 or so years, that pattern has essentially been reversed. And it's happening not just here in the United States, but across Western democracies.
Education levels, more than someone's race, gender, or religion, increasingly the best predictor of how Americans will vote. Matt Grossman directs the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. His new book on this subject, it's titled Polarized by Degrees. Matt, why is this change apparently happening?
Well, the big association is with the rise of social and cultural issues relative to economic issues in our politics. So the more that the parties divide based on those social issues and their views of cultural change, the more that education becomes the big dividing line rather than income.
And, you know, I mean, we are so polarized politically in this country. It feels very toxic in many ways, this class-based politics. How do we bridge that divide? Can we?
It is difficult to do, especially in the next couple weeks when we'll be at our very height of polarization. There are times when we can be more united. Polls show that when the Olympics are on or it's the 4th of July, people tend to feel a little bit better about the opposing party. But that's not, you know, a long-term solution. And the international context is, you know, nobody else has this two-party system that is as evenly divided as we are election after election. And that tends to increase. Increase the polarization.
Yeah, I was going to say, we mentioned in the lead-in that some of this change is happening not just in the United States, but around the world in other countries. And you just sort of touched on it because they have different political systems, like the UK, for example, is a parliamentary system, and it's not at all like what we have here. But nonetheless, there have been changes elsewhere that mirror what's happening here. And why would that be in other countries then?
Well, the big difference in the United States is that two-party system. So if you have lots of places where there's a populist, an anti-immigration, a nativist party starts to rise, but in our system, it has to occur within the Republican Party. You have lots of places where a more urban, educated party develops like a Green Party or a Liberal Party, but in our system, it has to take over the Democratic Party. And so the divisions between the left and the right everywhere are switching from income to education. But the form that it takes in the United States is unique and uniquely polarizing.
So I wonder, you know, given the two-party system that we have here, how much more important the independent vote is this time around?
Well, certainly there are still people in the middle, but it is a small number. You know, I think we had 4 or 5% undecided in most polls nationally, and history suggests only about half of those people will actually show up to vote. So most people are on one side, but that doesn't mean that we don't see changes in every election. So in this election, the big question is, Will some of these education divides that have been concentrated among white voters make their way to Black, Latino, and Asian American voters, where they've traditionally voted at high rates for Democrats, even though there's a lot of ideological diversity along the same educational lines within those groups as among white voters?
Can you give us one or two examples on how each of the parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, have sort of shifted their focus and how they cater to this change of because of this education divide?
Well, overall, the party's candidates, the party platforms, everything that you can think of is talking more about social issues like immigration, like gay rights, like drugs, like abortion than they have been in the past. But that's not to say that we're at a point of stasis. We really have had big cultural changes leftward. That is, opinions on these social and moral issues have been moving to the left over time. But the Republican Party has been able to be the voice of those who say things are moving too far, too fast, even if they concede ground on some issues and move to others. The other big piece of this is that it's not just policy issues. You know, our culture really has been moving leftward, and conservatives are right to perceive our social institutions as increasingly dominated by educated people with distinct values, but there's a rebellion against that.
We are speaking with Matt Grossman, who directs the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. We're going to keep our focus on the diploma divide to finish off today's Countdown 2024 next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And welcome back to Thursday's Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Michigan State political scientist Matt Grossman, author of the new book Polarized by Degrees, remains with us to close out today's Countdown 2024.
So, Matt, how do we head off a catastrophe in this country if the polarization is getting worse and worse and the education divide is going to clearly get worse and worse as both political parties basically pander to what they view as their constituents? Where does this all end?
Well, there are a lot of self-reinforcing processes here that are going to make it worse. And unfortunately, some of the international evidence suggests that, you know, polarization does not end well. It ends in institutional decay and even increased political violence. There are some, you know, some small scale interventions that do work. For example, we can actually inform people that people on the other political side are not as united in the most extreme positions as we perceive, and that tends to reduce polarization. But there's nothing that's a good institutional fix here to make this less virulent in the short term.
You talk about political violence and the potential increase for that. How concerned are you, depending on whoever wins the day after Election Day?
Well, it's certainly concerning that the losers are more unlikely to accept the results of an election. That does occur all over the world, but it's getting worse in the United States, and it's obviously being egged on by our political candidates. So that is a difficult process, and is especially going to be difficult in an election that is basically 50-50 now, where either side is going to feel aggrieved if they lose.
Talking the diploma divide. Thank you so much, Michigan State political scientist Matt Grossman. He is author of the new book Polarized by Degrees.
Now on the TGIF edition of Countdown 2024.
TGIF, I like that.
Yeah. Well, we have a really good show planned tomorrow.
We do.
Not like today's was chopped liver, but we have a really
They're
interesting
all good.
One tomorrow. Well, tomorrow's really special. We have Margaret Brennan, who is the host of Face the Nation on CBS News, and she's going to join us to handicap the home stretch sprint of the entire campaign. So really try to catch that show. And remember, we are here every weekday afternoon at 2:30. If you miss a show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All you have to do is you search for Countdown 2024, and then what do? You follow
the show.